Good evening, Little Saigon, Seattle. Good evening to all the various folks out there battling the Grungut tribes of Sector 8. There's reason to believe that there's an uprising in various cities, most of it due to chicken strips. It is September the 23rd, 2020, right around 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I'm with my good friends Carmageddon and Raylene. What's up, folks?
Hey, guys. You know what? I'm never sure who's going to say something first, and for whatever reason, I just have this idea that if Raylene and I say salute at the exact same time, that the world will explode. I don't know. I don't know what that is, so I always hesitate.
Salute.
Salute.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just eyeing.
Okay. Well, I will tell you, just full disclosure to my friends and to my listeners, I kind of got into a really shitty state of mind today. This is not your fault. I am not giving you... Oh, no, it's not one thing, friends. It's a whole bunch of stuff. It's like, all of a sudden, whatever you want to call it, my buffer, you know, in computer science and in engineering, there's a concept of a buffer, and a buffer is a space. It's a finite space. Once you fill it up, you basically have to dump what's in it. And my buffer's just filled up right now. That's all. So
yeah. What do you normally do to, you know, clear that out?
I mean, these days, probably not the best. I don't really respond to them in the best way. I can tell you what I do, but I've already talked about it on my podcast, and I really don't like belaboring it.
You need a reset. You're going to get a reset soon. Don't worry. We're going to do this radio drama. We have some really good family plans with the Lighthearts.
Yeah.
You're going to have a great reset.
That'll be therapeutic.
Yeah. And I'm not disputing that theoretically, and I think that sounds awesome. You know, right now... Here's my plan every day, to try to wake up every day, to try to go to sleep at night, and to try to be as happy as possible. I know that doesn't sound very complicated or interesting, but that's basically my plan right now.
That's a good plan.
You know?
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, that's pretty much the one I have.
You know, food, water, shelter. You know, how am I going to stay alive this week? And things are going to get sketchier. And I know that, you know, that can be a depressing topic, so... It is what it is.
It can be, and also it can lead to hope, right? Because by talking about it, your expectations and your desires, that network of friends that you have, you know, just inadvertently or overtly put their heads together to try to help you solve those problems, you know?
Oh, I know.
Absolutely. You made me feel better last night, Dan. You did. We were just chatting on the phone, as friends do sometimes, and you kind of made me feel better about like people going door to door and forced vaccinating at gunpoint and kind of stuff, and kind of talked me backwards on that. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. And I was just trying to reason it out, because I do believe that this particular leaky boat we're all in it. You know, we're in it even with the bad guys, and the bad guys may not know it. Because frankly, risk takers, I mean, we're going to get into this. So you guys know, folks, tonight, the core topic revolves around Willy Wonka and the chocolate factory. But on a deeper level, it relates to the type of character Willy Wonka is and the types of lessons he teaches and other related matters. And the reason why I mentioned that related to what we're talking about just now is because, well, I wonder why. It's because these people... These really dark Slugworth people we're talking about every day, they're in the same leaky boat with us. They are.
Yeah,
that's true. They may be crazy risk takers who say, I will grab the everlasting gobstopper. I'll take the magical blueberry pill. Yes, they're risk takers, and they don't really seem to understand boundaries, which we'll talk about with Willie, you know, as we...
with Good Willie. Old Willie.
Good old Willie. So before we go too far... I really have only ever seen the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I never saw the remake. Full disclosure, I love the original. I didn't even want to horrify myself by seeing the remake. Now, people will say, well, it was really, really great, and maybe Johnny Depp was wonderful. But I don't know. Have you guys seen both those movies? And maybe, you know, Raylene, starting with you, if you have seen them both, you know, am I missing out by not seeing the later version?
If I am a person that once I love something, it's very hard for me to watch a remake. So I'm a purist like you. But if you think about not reading the book first, then you can kind of go, well, I'm not actually a purist, so I can attempt to. So I really like the backstory of Willy Wonka, which is totally not canon, but he became a, and so I can speak about it because it's not canon, that he became that way because his father was a dentist and never even let him eat candy. Sorry, I couldn't speak. He never let him eat candy, and candy was so fun. And so he felt so robbed by that that he became obsessed with it and became Willy Wonka. So I kind of liked having a little more backstory about him and things like that. It was strange. You know, I liked that in the original movie, the Oompa Loompas were all different people, and they used one man and CGI'd him as many for the Oompa Loompas in the next movie. Yeah. I thought that was strange. Like, they had no autonomy. They didn't even have their own faces and voices. And, I mean, maybe, I mean, I don't know about the Oompa Loompas enough, so it's kind of a strange way to go with it, that they were even less individual. I didn't really like that as much.
What do you think? Hey, Jay, hey, Carmageddon, you've seen them both maybe, but what are your thoughts on that?
I haven't seen the remake. I've only ever seen the first one, which I liked just fine. It was really fun when I was a kid. I didn't get the darker parts of it. Like, those were unsettling to me, and I didn't understand that that was the point. So I didn't appreciate it nearly as much as a child as I did as an adult, which is kind of funny. But also, I was really a weird kid. Like, I'm so glad my kids today, I watch my kids watch movies. They ask really good questions, and they're outspoken. They're like actively engaged in watching TV shows with us when we watch them.
Rarely, yeah.
Movies and stuff, you know, like this one.
Yeah.
We watched this one with them, that's why I brought it up. I wasn't so much, and I was always in front of a TV when I was a kid, literally just being programmed. So, but when I watched it last night or the night before with Ray, it was like watching it for the first time in many ways, because I was actively looking for stuff, you know, and little things to pop up and little themes. I was just looking for patterns, and I noticed things I hadn't noticed before, and little, like, everything from little problems with physics to like beyond the normal stuff to fun personality quirks. And then, you know, we did a little bit of research the following day to try to find out more interesting things to kind of tie it all together, and it added a lot of depth to the film itself as a phenomenon, right? And that, I'd like to talk about that a little bit, because whether or not you saw the second movie, Johnny Depp's a fantastic actor for the types of stuff that he does. He doesn't, I don't know if he's done playing characters with depth, but he had, which is, you know, maybe that's just his thing now. He gets to do a lot of, like, really flamboyant.
Finding Neverland was an amazing movie, and he did a great job at that.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's incapable. I just don't know if sometimes actors get kind of, I don't know, whatever, it's Hollywood. So who knows? Who knows anymore?
Well, okay.
Where was I going with all that?
You know what?
The original movie was a phenomenon. That's what I was going to say. It was a phenomenon, a cultural, classical, American phenomenon. And then when you learn about what actually went into the production of the movie, it adds even more depth to it. It's pretty fun.
Well, I want to talk about that, but before we go too far, I want to talk about one of the first sort of scenes in that movie. And it's that sort of, and it's not the first, but it's early in the movie where we're at the candy shop, and the singer, the pharmacy guy, the shop owner breaks out in a song about the candy, the candy man.
The candy man can.
He does. And the question to both of you, because this is an interesting place to start, And we will talk about, we'll talk about your topic too, okay, Carmageddon. We'll get to that one next. But as a good place to start, all right, think about the Stranger Danger, because this movie came out, I think, the year I was born. And I can tell you, back in the 70s, the Stranger Danger thing was a big thing. And it's like, don't take candy from strangers. And yet the movie starts with this sort of powerful thing about this really strange guy who can do anything, and he's the candy man. And I just wanted your guys' thoughts. Is that creepy? Is it not creepy? What is it?
Oh, it's creepy.
Well, I'm just going to piggyback onto this before you guys have your commentary. Don't forget that the candy shop man literally said nobody was born to be a candy man like Willy Wonka. Like, he was definitely born to be, as if it was like a special, he was an entity. All right? He actually said, what was it, Jay?
He's like Q, but with candy.
He said he was born to be a candy man. Like that was a really strange way to go with that. That's how it started. So yeah. I definitely kind of got creepy vibes from that. Right?
Yeah, he has this, you learn in the very first moments of dialogue that Willy Wonka is this larger-than-life, extraordinary, almost mythical person. And I believe that's important to the story, but also, it is pretty, he's deified immediately.
Yeah.
Because to be born predestined to be something, that usually speaks to, the hand of God somehow, predestination and all that.
Yeah, it does. And the thing that I think is interesting too, in this context, is that later, it's still early in the movie, but later, after Charlie wins the ticket, he's walking home, and Slugworth, he gets cornered, doesn't he? He gets cornered by Slugworth, and it's like, listen, you know, he gets the speech. You remember the Slugworth speech he gets on the way home?
Yep.
Okay, yep. Here's a question. Is it true, because I'm not an expert on Roald Dahl. I looked at some of his stuff. I researched and looked at some of his life. I'm not an expert on the guy. He seems like he lived a pretty adventurous life. So is it possible that there's a common theme in his stories that kids should be more brave, gregarious? You know, that we shouldn't keep kids in prisons and we shouldn't be afraid of letting them out into the world, that maybe one angle of learning is by going to places that are kind of dangerous, you know, and not.
Yeah.
And again, this is a difficult issue because there are a lot of creepy people in the world. And and this whole issue of pedophilia that's been in the news for the last year adds another angle to this, especially the Candyman bullshit, because there is that dark side to it, isn't there?
Okay. Yes, I'm going to say I do know a little bit about Roald Dahl, a little bit. Again, not an expert, but Roald Dahl was he was born in the 20s or something.
He was born
Roald Dahl was sent to a boarding school because he got in trouble at his regular school in England.
Yeah.
He got in trouble for playing a prank, okay? And he got in big trouble with the principal or whatever, the headmaster, whatever they were called. And his father sent him off to a boarding school. For real. That happened.
Yeah.
So, yes, he did go have a lot of run-ins with schoolmasters and the principal and things like that. That did happen. And I'm pretty sure that Roald Dahl was either an Enneagram 5 or an Enneagram 7, which I think he might have been a 7, maybe. Okay? Which... there's just a lot about the seeking adventure and wanting their freedom and being, but the darkness of his stories and the seriousness in which he takes children kind of harkens more to a 5 for me. I feel like there's a complexity of thought that I shouldn't say that 7s don't have that. They do sometimes. But it's not just optimism. There is definitely the shadow side to all these things. So for me, I'm pretty sure that, yes, he thinks that children are magical and should be left have the freedom to to be whimsical and to be adventurous. And I think
can
that,
I interrupt
that's
you on that?
Love him.
Can I interrupt you on
Please.
That? It just it's a core concept I'm getting from him because again, I know him through film. I know him mm-hmm. from The Fantastic Mr. Fox. I know him from Willy Wonka. I know him from other stories. I know him from, you know, The Giant Peach, which was a great mm-hmm. story, and The Glass Elevator, yep. which was a great story. And it mm-hmm. seems like he really believed that one of the keys to growing up is gaining autonomy.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, seems like it, yeah. I think so. There's every story setting is somewhat grim, somewhat dark. There's a large, intimidating aspect to each one that should be frightening to a child.
Like the witches. That book, you're going to love it, Dan. We listened to it on audiobook with the kids a few years ago. And it starts with his grandmother smoking thick, like big fat cigars and telling him stories about the witches that eat children and how to spot them. And,
oh, yeah. And basically get that on audiobook. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It
I'll have to.
Absolutely yeah. amazing. And then this child is on their own. Like with the witches that are trying to eat him. It's so good.
Now,
the other thing that
go ahead.
He does well, in my opinion, is he describes things and he does it like in a manner that keeps going in a direction that makes it horrifying and but also singular and unique. And it's like a kind of oh gosh, I was going to say it's like poetry, but I suppose it's prose. So anyway, he's got the twits. I didn't remember reading the twits, but Raylene really remembered the twits. So she looked it up on YouTube to show me, and there's a video of a couple of people reading it, narrating it. It's really well done. We didn't
like
watch the whole thing. Yeah, it is. It's really well done. You should look it up later and watch that one too. And then what were you going to say?
No, I like what... So, well, okay. So, I will look at these, I promise. And so, I do think it's critical to identify some concepts as we go through this. So, I think it's fair to say from listening to you guys that autonomy was a factor for Roald Dahl in his understanding of childhood development. That one of the keys to growing up is becoming independent enough and unafraid enough to confront the world, because the world is scary. Like, one of the messages here is, yes, the world is scary, but it's not all bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if he went to boarding school, and then he ended up being a World War fighter pilot, so I don't know if, like, I don't know how much combat he saw. You know, maybe he only just got trained, but...
No, he got shot down, I think. Or
yeah.
he crashed
yeah.
the plane. Yeah.
Yeah. In Egypt.
Yep.
So that sounds pretty intense.
And he was also involved in the intelligence work. So,
oh, for real?
Yeah. He was a spook. So, I'm not saying that makes him a bad guy, okay? I am not.
This well, is, damn it.
And this comes from his website, folks. This comes from his website. You know, I have a link to his website in the notes. On the website, it says that, yes, he was a fighter pilot. He was also a spy. So... And
oh wow!
Yeah,
he married an actress too.
Yeah,
no
Patricia Neal. Patricia Neal. Uh-huh. And actually, she was. They were married for 30 years, and then they got divorced. Patricia Neal. I remember her from some movies. I want to look her up really quick because I think I'll just remember. I want to see old.
I don't
pictures.
Remember when, but I remember reading something about. I think his kid. I thought he had more than one kid, but Raylene said he had one child. So, anyway,
I mean, he had five kids. I was wrong about the one child.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense, because I thought I remembered more than one.
One of them
in
died.
Any case, somebody was writing about him, at any rate, and said that he used to spend hours and hours in this chair of his, like a reclining chair, a sitting chair, and write his stories, you know? And I was, I think when they were describing it, they made it sound like it was like a throne cockpit like adventure chair, you know, because all of his imagination time was happening in that seat. He was creating all these worlds and
yeah, he did. And he also created the BFG in a bedtime story for his children.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, BFG, what does that stand for again?
big friendly giant.
Big friendly giant. Right, right, right. I'm not super. I'm familiar with the big friendly giant. I never got into that genre, but BFG, big friendly giant.
The books are great. They are great.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, it's like, I wish I could read everything, and I wish I was in one of those moods where I would read everything. You find yourself wondering about the books you've read and the books you haven't. And I've read books, but I haven't read any Roald Dahl. I've been exposed to him either through readings. Like, I had teachers, you know, in primary school who would read Roald Dahl to us, and I really enjoyed that. They read, you know, James and the Giant Peach, and the same, I think the same teacher read The Glass Elevator. And I still remember it because it was so creepy. Because, and the other thing too, it's, doesn't The Glass Elevator happen in terms of story right after the end of Willy Wonka? Like, when The Glass Elevator, you know, goes up in the air at the end of the movie, the next movie would be it goes into space, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right before Star Trek II. It's like right after Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but right before Star Trek II.
Well, yeah, he actually said, I'm never letting them make that movie until I'm dead.
Right.
And his estate sold the rights later to make more movies, but he was like very pissed off. He had a thing against having the adventure laid out for you in TV and movies. Obviously, he didn't respect that just when you look at the character in this movie with a kid. What's the kid's name? Is it Timmy TV or something like that?
Oh, oh gosh. It's not Johnny TV or
Mike TV.
Mike TV, yeah. So Mike is a character that Willy Wonka seemed to dislike the most. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah.
He really hated that kid.
He hated that kid. I love the line where he goes, try opening your mouth a little wider when you talk next time. Something like that. It was so awesome because he leans in real close. He gets all intense. Like, he just wants to grab his face and just take his face off of his head, you know, and throw it in the garbage can because he just doesn't want to hear him anymore. And it's because he has that, what's that accent? What is that accent? That kid's got a hell of an accent, but he's got that high-pitched, really obnoxious voice.
He's an American kid.
Yeah.
Oh, I know that, but it's like an East Coast kind of thing. I'm not sure. I'm not from there. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, people.
I
don't know all of your accents.
Yeah, Mike TV, I can't place him myself either as far as accent.
I want a real gun, and his dad does that creepy smile, not until you're 12, son. Right? And then, guess this. Okay, so first of all, that seems hilarious, and I've always loved it, and I don't know why. And then I found out it took over 40 takes to get that.
Oh, shit. No wonder that dad looked like that. That was his 40th take, babe. He's like,
what?
You better fucking get this right. I don't know. But I'd like to see all of them.
It makes it even funnier now. Like, for real. Next time you watch it, you're going to think that's so much funnier.
Yep. So, another angle to Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory story is this, and I don't know if it's common throughout, but it seems like it may be a common theme in Roald Dahl's work, but I could be wrong. But another theme is this idea that adults are... adults seem kind of ambiguous in the Roald Dahl world. Like, it doesn't seem like any of them are that trustworthy or necessarily that much, you know, of a person as a role model or whatever. It almost seems like adults are a bit sketchy. Is that wrong?
So, no, I think you're right.
It's actually, okay, so like when I was talking about the movie, or not the movie, which I didn't see all the way through, but and that was a long time ago, the book, The Witches, the grandmother was very trusted. Like, the grandmother was near and dear to the main character's heart and very trustworthy, but other adults weren't. Other adults were both obtuse and oblivious, or they were tricking you because they were going to eat you. I mean, that's really what it came down to, is that the grandmother was, it reminds me of my grandmother, teaching you to know the sheep and the wolves. And so there were key adults in some of the stories, that were trustworthy, but most were very self-involved, didn't pay attention, and couldn't be trusted ultimately. Yeah, like in the BFG, it was about, I think it was a little girl that was in an orphanage. I believe that she lived in a group home. And at night, in the very, very, very beginning, I won't spoil it for anybody, there was a giant that came that had these giant ears and had little dreams in bottles and would come and give little kids dreams, right? And she gets whisked away with this giant, and then all the other giants are the villains in the story, right? All the other giants are bloodthirsty and love to eat children.
Hmm. You know, I got an interesting question before we go too far. I've never read BFG, but what you've just described sounds similar to the animated movie Monsters, Inc. Like, it's similar. Mm-hmm. In Monsters, Inc., the monsters are collecting screams, right? They're trying to scare kids and collect...
I'm obsessed with Monsters, Inc. It's one of my only favorite Disney movies.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's like the same thing, but it sounds similar to what you described, like the same basic starting point. But maybe where it diverges is that the giants in BFG, they are really malevolent, right? They're not, you know...
They're awful. And they're bigger, and they're bigger and... crazier and stronger than the BFG, because the BFG is actually a runt compared to the rest of them.
Oh.
But has kind heart. And it's a kind of a different story there. So, and you kind of think that, yes, it's less, you know, in Monsters, Inc., most of the monsters were actually just being fleeced by the elite.
Right.
You know, kind of like statists.
Mm-hmm. It was very bureaucratic. Monsters, Inc. was a highly bureaucratic thing. Very structured, very hierarchical, and very sketchy. So let's not go too far off the road. Let's talk about Grandpa. What do you think, Raylene? What do you think of Grandpa in Willy Wonka?
I think Grandpa is really a selfish bastard. This is how I feel.
Grandpa Joe. Grandpa Joe. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's an asshole, okay? So I have some things to say. It's one thing if both sets of grandparents are literally invalids and can't get out of bed. Mom says, I've never seen your foot touch the floor at all. So they're making her clean out their bedpans, okay? I want you to understand that this poor working mother that has to make cabbage juice, cabbage-like liquid for dinner every day, this is how poor they are. This is what's the situation that we're in. And Grandpa Joe has just decided there was nothing worth living for, which he does confirm when he believes that the last ticket was taken in Japan. In the movie, it's different. What movie? What country? So the fraud. When he finds out about this person getting the last ticket, he says, now Charlie has nothing to live for. Okay? So he's a terrible... father, a terrible grandfather, that can, as soon as he realizes that he gets to go to the chocolate factory and have chocolate forever, all of a sudden he's dancing with joy, and he can walk his ass to the bathroom. I just find that out. I'm mad. All right. I'm angry.
He jumps on his feet, Raylene. He jumps on his feet. He jumps on his feet and he starts dancing.
Now, I do think that there's like a little lesson that what a child's heart, having the excitement of a child can do to an old man. I do know that that's the commentary that's probably supposed to be happening here. But the fact that he let this happen to himself and didn't already feel that way about Charlie himself and for him bothers me. It bothers me that Charlie went and bought himself a chocolate bar and has given it to his grandpa to eat. That makes me mad.
Yeah.
Okay? Then Grandpa decides to break rules. He actually gets a loaf of bread, and Mom's like, where did you get this loaf of bread? He's like, I don't care where he got it. He could have stolen it. He doesn't say that, but that's what's implied. He doesn't care. He's like, yeah, good, Charlie. I'm not going to work. I'm going to lay in bed all day. Go steal me bread. That's how I felt about that scene. How about you?
Well, I mean, hey, Carmageddon, dude, what do you think about the Grandpa Joe?
First, I wanted to say a couple minutes ago that the – I'm not surprised that there aren't any parent figures considering Roald's parents sent him off to boarding school. And then he was probably there until he turned 18 and was forced into the war, right?
No. He went and did traveling instead.
Well, whatever. His parents made him, they abandoned his ass and kicked him off into school. So no matter what happened with the war, no matter what about that, he got, his parents abandoned him. So they couldn't be looked to for guidance. And it makes sense that in his stories, all of the mentor figures would be non-human sort of people, right? And that all of the direct report adults would be the tyrants.
And a soft spot for old people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's...
And then about...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Stand off.
Yeah, dude.
Go ahead, Dan.
I'm sorry. Dude, you can go ahead, because you were going to say something.
Yeah, but I don't remember what it was now, and I'm really sorry about that. I just blanked, is all.
Sorry.
I couldn't remember what it was. No, it's not your fault. I do that all the time, actually. You know I do. I do it
ADD?
All the time.
ADD? Yeah. ADD is real.
Don't worry about
yeah.
it.
So, okay. So, here's my thing about Grandpa Joe. When I was watching this movie, the times I watched it when I was younger, I always had the impression that he was basically a sweetheart old man. But as I got older, I started seeing it more the way Raylene describes it. Because,
yeah.
You know, when you get older, you have to have jobs and pay rent and pay for food
yeah.
and do this. And so you look at old Grandpa Joe, who doesn't do anything at all. Does nothing. And I don't even know how you stay alive that way. It's like when the mom says, I've never seen him out of bed. It's like, how many years has he been in bed and how could he still be alive? You know?
Yeah, for real. What if he had like some other caretaker, you know, just a couple of years prior to that? So it hasn't been such a tremendous amount of time. I don't know.
I don't
Is
know.
But
possible?
The other grandparents?
Does it
I mean,
matter? I don't think it matters because
yeah.
ultimately all the other stuff's there. Whatever his reason for staying in bed, once he shows that he's capable, he's not only capable, he like starts getting into mischief and stuff.
Yeah.
They end up at the, yeah. So I think he was probably just really depressed for whatever reason and decided that he didn't want to be a leader for his family anymore. And that's real sad because... Who's going to do it then? Not the other two. The
yeah.
other guys in the house.
He also didn't even care that Charlie might have stolen that bread and literally yelled at the daughter, the mother, saying, who cares where he got it? Joe's an entitled prick.
Okay, hold on a second. I need to blow the whistle real quick. We have to remember that these aren't real people. These are the portrayals from the direction, right?
Stop.
So then...
So we're talking about this movie, and that's what we're talking about. So I'm going to argue with you.
No, wait, hold on. I wanted to say that they had to write... The screenplay was different than the novel, correct? So they're putting in language in there. The director...
But we're talking about the movie.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hey.
Never mind.
Hey, guys. Come on.
Oh, this isn't us arguing. This is us just talking to each other.
Well, you know, here's a question. If either one of you are familiar with this, because if you're not, that's okay. And maybe one of my listeners can email me. But with respect to the other old people, I never understood a lot about them. Like, it seems like they were scenery or background. You know, like they're
yeah.
just the other old people in the bed. But I never really understood their story. And... I'm wondering, in the book, do we learn more about them, or is it just they're just not that relevant?
I can say the fact that I don't remember there being much means there probably wasn't much.
Yeah, you don't have time for much more than
yeah. It was
one
really all the description was about how they were
characters.
All in one bed together. Like I remember them, the descriptions being about how they were placed in the bed and didn't do much. That's what I remember as a kid from being a kid.
Yeah,
which looks frightfully awkward. I would not want to be there.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you got nowhere else to be, then that's it. But
yeah, and then he gets him in trouble at the end. I guess we're not. There's no spoilers, so I'm actually bothered also that he broke the rules with the soda and got Charlie in trouble, and then poor Charlie gets screamed at, and at the end, and it just felt. So bad because this is his role model And I mean, there is some, maybe that's important to the arc itself. Maybe that's important because all of these kids are shitbags because of their parents. And here's Joe being a shitbag, but Charlie is a heart of gold and is the only one who deserves to have a palace of whimsy if he chose.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's move on, okay? Charlie, and I want, before we move on too far, I just got to say, I'm not a huge fan of musicals, but one of the things I really loved about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the original movie, is as far as musicals go, I thought it was a pretty good one. I mean, I thought that there were some really great songs. Like, I really loved the Candyman song, even though it's a little sketchy. And I really liked the song that he sings in the chocolate room, you know, Pure Imagination. That was always
Pure Imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
It's a really great song. And Gene, what's his name? Last name?
Wilder.
Gene Wilder had an amazing voice, and he was a great singer. I assume he sung these songs. I always assumed it because it sounded like him, but I never really researched that. But I will say, I thought the musical stuff was well done. So you flash forward in the story, and you're at the point where basically it's a big day, and they're going to open up the gates and let the kids in, you know, because this is the big day. You got the golden ticket. They're going to let you in. And so one of the questions I have for you, Raylene, before we go too much further, is who is Willy Wonka, in your opinion? Because we kind of talked about this earlier, but let's return to it. Who is Willy Wonka in the context of his community? Okay, you can give your answer, but I just want to kind of frame it. Is he a leader? Is he a mystical figure? Is he a demon? Is he a religious figure? I mean, what is he, do you think, Raylene?
I think he is more of a mythical figure. I think that, first of all, there is something is cool about Willy Wonka, and it is that he was tired of this shit and went into his own world.
Right.
Okay? And it was something that he built that, and then he felt like he had to protect. And I know that it was all about stealing the trade secrets and IP stuff, you know, and that kind of theme. I understand that that is the canon, but I feel like that doesn't make as much sense because he's so creative. He's just going to keep thinking of more new things. And I don't think it's about the money itself, unless he really, really, really wants to provide a wonderful life of Oompa Loompas on their time off, which I would love.
Yeah.
Because I do think that if he was rescuing them as refugees, then that's kind of a beautiful story. That said, I really do believe that as far as the story goes and what the movie is trying to sell, I do think it's because he felt like this world was a cruel place and he had to go somewhere else to protect it. And he was hoping that he could share that, and that he was hoping to prove himself wrong as a skeptic and as a villain. I think that he was becoming a villain, and I do believe that he intentionally wanted to hurt children, which were a product of this society. I do. He did. That is what he wanted to do. He knew what he was doing. In fact, the movie director was going to make a nod or show that he had planted each of the golden tickets where they did on purpose. Did you know that?
Huh.
And it got cut, but they left the nod with, what's his name? Visiting. What's his name again? Glasses?
Slugworth.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So when Slugworth was, he was always there, right? So there is that nod is still existing. So it's almost as if he said he set up a system like a kind of like a, you know, Star Wars, where they have the way to blow it up, the Death Star.
You mean like the Death Star?
Even though you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
You know how with the, you know how you blow up the Death Star.
Well, like you go, yeah, you shoot some torpedoes down the hole.
Yeah, which sounds
horrible.
So that's what it's like for Willy Wonka. It's like it's a torture device. It's a Death Star. He's going to take his sacrifices. And there are reasons to believe that this has happened before on some level. All right. And I know that everyone's acting like they've never seen anything like this, and this is once of a lifetime thing. But all those Oompa Loompas had songs prepared.
Yeah.
Okay. So
true.
It was either definitely pre-planned for sure, or it's happened before. All right. And am I going the right way with this, Dan? Can I keep going?
No, you keep going.
Okay. And then you look at how... So I believe that he was ready to destroy everything and become the world's biggest supervillain. And this was a test. And it was basically like, it's not my fault if I become a supervillain. Just give me one good kid. All right, this is the best good kid you got. We'll see what I can do. He will be so tempted. And then I can destroy the world because there is no one redeemable. And I have nothing to stop me.
Now,
I don't even feel bad about it.
Can I? So I want to move on to the next issue, but it is related. Okay, is that okay if we move
on?
Wait,
here? You didn't give me your opinion on what I said, which is what I'm.
Well, I love what you said, but frankly, I like your opinion better than my. I think your what you said sounds better without my opinion because I like what you said. Is that fair? For I listen. It's one of those scenarios where a lot of this is your perspective and what you bring into it. We all have different experiences, so a lot of this is what were our experiences going into this, right? And so I love what you said. Is that good?
Yeah, I don't need compliments. I actually was just like, do you have any arguments? What are you thinking?
I mean, right now I was thinking about the next thing I wanted to talk about because okay. Here's the deal. All these kids are nasty, but in my opinion, the least nasty kid dies early. Or not dies, but gets gets dealt with early. And it happens in the chocolate room. You know the big river of chocolate, and Augustus Gloop is drinking the chocolate out of the river, and Willie says, stay away from the river, kid. You fall in. And it's like, oh, I love this chocolate. And he falls in. And I just, you know what? Gluttony is bad. And clearly his parents sucked, but the kid didn't seem like a terrible kid. He just seemed like a kid that didn't Here's the thing. I feel like Willy Wonka in that very first part of it is punishing the wrong person. Like, I feel like the kid should be helped and the parent should be tossed in the river of chocolate. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I think that... it has to be consistent, so it has to be all kids, and I think it makes sense that the author would have gone this way. But I like what you're saying because you're correct. Now, we could say that the parents are punished the most because they have these facades and these identification with their children in this really sick way where they're living vicariously through them,
yeah.
All of the parents, as if they can't find joy or notoriety or pride in themselves. And so they put it all on their kids. And in a way, now they have to deal with that. And it's kind of like the biggest blow to the parents' pride, ultimately. Because they're all disfigured afterwards.
Yeah, but I mean, I still get back to this. That the one... Okay, so another thing you mentioned too, Raylene, and I didn't know this, and I think you mentioned this, it could have been Carmageddon. But you mentioned that in the original story... They don't get fixed. Like the blueberry girl, she doesn't get turned back into a normal girl. She stays a blueberry, right? In the original story?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, they were like half that way. Like she was still blue or something like that. And then the other kid or the one that gets tiny gets stretched out and then he's long and weird. Like they all do have permanent disfigurements at the end.
Okay, so in the real world, they're not back to normal. In the actual, I don't want to say the real world. In the original story, they don't go back to normal. They end up disfigured, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what they get.
Yeah, but I mean, and this is the thing.
It's their scarlet letter.
No, I'm not actually agreeing with that, but it is about teaching lessons.
Well, it is about teaching lessons. And this is the thing about Willy, throughout Willy Wonka's, is that he enjoys it. I mean, you talked about him wanting to discover something. You see, this is where I'll talk to you about that really quick. I like what you're saying about Willy maybe being potentially a master criminal, someone on his way to being the bad guy. And I get that. Like, you can see that, you can see that in the way the role is performed because it's edgy and dark. You know, even with, God, I always forget his name, Gene...
Wilder.
Gene Wilder. I always forget his name. Why? Because the word wild is too common. And Gene. Anyways, Gene Wilder. You can tell the way he performs, he plays the role, that he does sense the darkness, and there is that edge to it. And so I could see where that goes, where he really is someone trying to test things or to test the world or to say, world, should I become evil? Should I become evil? Let me find out if there's one.
Or maybe, like, I want to become evil, but I have to play the game of chance to give that, like, the kryptonite.
Yeah.
He understood that there was only one way to take him out, and it's so hard to do because no one's going to know what it is.
Yeah.
So, it's like Rumpelstiltskin did the same fucking thing, by the way.
Oh, you guys can't hear me. Huh?
No, I can hear you. Oh, Justin, hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, you can? Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I didn't see my... Anyway. So, Willie's got, like, the... He's part of the setting, right? Charlie is the protagonist, and we're really supposed to learn that Charlie is the pure-hearted kid, and he's the one that the story is really about. We all know that. The other four kids are all kind of representative of decadence, you know? And Charlie's dirt poor. I mean, his fucking last name is Bucket, right? Which is, that's an empty fucking thing. A bucket is usually empty.
Yeah.
So, or you use it to haul stuff around with, right? But it's a fucking utility device. So that this kid's, like, destined to be this poor sap. And whether or not Willie has them all staged ahead of time or whatever, he does get to Charlie, like, awfully quick. And Willie's got, like, a lot of other powers that they suggest and that we see in the film. I also haven't read the story, so I can't really talk about what's in the book, but usually the writings are so much better than what film can produce. However, this one did really well with what they had. And you see him running around in this factory, and he is producing these things by, like, throwing shoes in here and a winter blanket in there, and he's got his machines all mysterious. He's a part of the device. Like, he is the magic that makes the candy, right?
And why is he worried about his secrets being stolen?
He's not. I think what he wants to do is he wants to see that the magic gets carried forward, and he also doesn't want to do it anymore. He wants to go do something else, but he has, I believe that it's a labor of love, and it was, like, always his dream, and now he's ready to step away from it, and I don't know why that is exactly, but...
No, share it.
It could be.
Share it.
Yep, that's kind of what I was thinking, you know, like, because I like to think of it as what the original intent, he does have an edge to him, right? But I like to think of it like
there's high stakes.
It's really high stakes for him. He doesn't want to give the factory over to just anybody. And if Charlie is the one, and he knows that in some sort of omniscient way, then all the weird torture shit has to be intentional. It has to be.
Yeah.
And he knows exactly what it's going to take to push Charlie over the edge, too. So no matter what, if he's doing it all intentionally, he's a sick fucker.
He's a very lonely man.
Yeah,
okay? And I think it's a euphemism. Selling the secrets, I do think this is a euphemism for people knowing him too much. I think he needed his privacy and was afraid of that vulnerability.
Right.
And so now he's been there alone. He's doing all these things, and he realized that he's going mad. Here's another theory. He's going mad, and he realized that he needed a counterpart like his canary.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean,
why did the people are trying to steal his secrets? Why? Because they wanted to make money off of them.
But it is him.
He was
making the soul.
He was making the stuff because he wanted to make it, and the money was sort of a means to an end. I think he would have made it regardless. Like,
it wasn't about the money. It was about his secrets, because the process of creating this art, right, or this experience for all these children, which is what he wanted to do. This is just another way of going with this. What if he didn't want people when they were invading it and stealing it, it was actually felt like a piece of him. And so he was like, no, this is because this candy factory is me. It is. Yeah.
Okay. I got a weird.
It's decorated.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, that's it. Just look at the set and the way it's decorated, even his office and everything cut in half and everything. It's like he has all of the stuff inside of his head is actually built. He built it. He did it.
Yeah.
Willy Wonka is like the original Q from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Well, no, Willy Wonka is Dan. If Dan wasn't in his head, he made everything in his head and he was living in it.
Yeah, that too. I mean, same thing for me.
Oh boy. No, I was thinking about it though. Have either one of you guys read the first book? The first book, not the Lord of the Rings series, but The Hobbit. Have you guys read The Hobbit?
The Hobbit.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, The Hobbit.
Yeah, so you've read The Hobbit. So you know about the dragon named Smaug, Smaug, the dragon Smaug. Okay, so this is going to sound weird too, but one of the things that just occurred to me when you guys were describing the story from your perspective is that the story in The Hobbit and the story of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory are very similar. It's like Charlie is very similar to Bilbo Baggins. You know what I mean? In a way.
Definitely.
And this is also important because when in the second hour, we're going to talk a little bit about mythology and archetypes and stuff like that. But there is an aspect to Charlie's journey that is a lot like what's called the hero's journey. And that is the process by which someone is challenged and goes through tests and understands the tests and goes into the cave and returns and then becomes the hero. And Joseph Campbell wrote a book I highly recommend called, I think it was called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. I believe that George Lucas supposedly read that book before he came up with the first Star Wars movie, which is Episode 4, which is so depressing that he screwed up the numbers on us. But that being said, Charlie's kind of like Bilbo in a way. And I was wondering how you guys would respond to that. And also, before you respond, in some ways, Willy Wonka is a little bit like Smaug, a mixture between Smaug and, what's his name? Grumblegus, you know, the guy with the ring of power, the creepy ass.
Gollum.
In a weird way, it's like if you took Smaug and Gollum and put them together, it's like Willy Wonka, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm liking it. But I think that, yeah, there's definitely, like, Willy Wonka's a complex character.
Willy Wonka's a polymorph dragon. That's hilarious.
And so there's a lot in there about there is a guarding of treasure that is a thing.
Right.
And I think that treasure is like his imagination and his creation.
Agreed. And the other thing I was thinking about, too, is this name Bucket. Charlie Bucket. Okay, so I'm going to...
Rhymes with fuck it.
Okay, what I'm going to throw out there is this. What if this is darker than any of us can imagine?
Oh, it is.
What if Willy Wonka is really trying to find another sociopath to take over? And the entire series of tests is designed to see how Charlie responds to seeing other kids basically more or less almost killed. Like he sees.
That was my first take on it.
Go ahead, Raylene. If you want to go first, then Carmageddon.
That's it. I was just agreeing with you. Go ahead. Go talk.
Well, I yesterday or whatever we were talking about it, and I had thought I was telling Ray there's a surprising number of, maybe unsurprising number of Veruca Salt fan fictions that are like rated M for mature. But the reason I found that out was because I had this idea that the four cast aside children would grow up someday because they survived, unless, you know, they killed themselves because they were depressed, which is really dark. So let's not go there.
Yeah.
But they grow up, they survive, and they could become like these really pissed off adults that would want revenge on Willy, right? And so they would go looking for it by hurting Charlie somehow, I'm sure, to get back at Willy.
I know,
that's how that would go down.
But I want to talk about the concept of a bucket. What is a bucket? A bucket is empty. There's nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing in a bucket. It's a big empty thing. So
sometimes you shit in a bucket.
Yeah, and maybe what Willy Wonka needed was an empty spirit, a worn down spirit. Think about how Charlie lived. I mean, yeah, we get this kind of happy version, musical version of it, but it looked pretty fucking miserable, didn't it?
Well, he had nothing to live for, remember?
Justin and I at one point looked at each other and went, and I go, ugh, and he goes, okay, let's not do that right now about the pedophile aspect of it. Okay, because our children are there.
I wasn't even going to go there. I wasn't going there directly. It's just
No. I mean, but I am, because that's what we did. Okay, and there was this one part, and then at the end, and then he says, "Well, your whole family can come," and I'm like, but like four people have let lots of child molesters take their kids, and look at what the Hollywood parents do.
Yeah.
So that is the reality. And I of that, and yes, that can be a total overlay to this. Absolutely.
So, what if Charlie?
Speaking of, little go meta.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Little meta action here. One of the things we found out was that the scene in the end where Willie flies off the handle and says, "Good day, sir," and his face gets all red. They didn't prepare the young Peter for that. Peter Ostrom, the actor who played Charlie, they didn't prepare him for that ahead of time. And Gene thought that it would be a good idea to prepare him because it was such an extreme encounter. And the director said, absolutely not. I want his reaction.
He said they were friends. They eat lunch together every day. And he didn't
And that was Peter Ostrom's only Hollywood role. I think that shit might have really been too much for his young soul to handle. It was like, it was too real. And hopefully his parents pulled the plug on that one and said, we don't really want him doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And hopefully he was well taken care of money-wise. But yeah, that actors go through some pretty intense stuff. And that I would imagine
the young people... They did this to them throughout the entire movie, actually. There's a horrific list of things that the director did to the people, to the kids and to the children.
Amazing.
Well, give me another example, because you guys researched this. Give me another
chemical burn.
What?
Yeah, you know the wash thing, the wash and whatever it's called.
The what? The wash.
The one they're on the train. It's like a train, and they're getting hit with all this foam, right?
Yeah.
And then they go through like, and then it shrinks down. Yeah.
They sprayed them all with fire extinguisher chemicals. Okay, and that for 3 days afterward they had chemical burns. And they just had to do the scene like that, and they were just burning their eyeballs, and their skin was burning, and they used fire extinguishers for that. Okay.
Oh my God.
That's number one. And the scene where, here's another little tidbit that in the book, the only time Willy Wonka was singing, the only song from the book that they did was the song that the weird poem song that he sings when they're doing the crazy.
Yeah. When he's like on the river Styx in the boat going, no one can tell which way we're going.
Yeah,
backward or forward flowing.
The
weasels are a screaming and the monster. Yeah, I don't remember it, but it was like really creepy.
Yes, it scared me and I loved it. And so that scene was actually, that song was in the book. It was meant to be very disturbing. So they didn't prepare that for how crazy he was acting. And they, so the children actually thought he was going insane from being in the tunnel so long.
Oh, wow.
Actually. Okay. So there was just a lot of really weird mental torture that was happening where they wouldn't prepare them, even where they ran in and didn't know it was all candy. Like 2/3 of that place or 1/3 of it was actually edible. So they never saw the set. They were just always surprising the cast with what was happening as well. And it was some weird danger shit going on. People got hurt.
Hey, Dan, Ray read that the fucking Oompa Loompa on the boat, they didn't tell him that the boat was on a track. They told him he was actually piloting the boat. So then when they caused the boat to go wonky, like it's going to crash into shit, that guy's fucking freaking out like, oh my God, I'm going to crash this thing for real and ruin the whole scene. And that was the reaction they got.
Oh my God.
They were like Polish. They didn't even speak that language. They were from a circus. Okay? So like, for real. And No, I'm sorry to tell you that. So like, for real, they thought his driving will be more believable if he thinks he's actually driving the boat. This is the kind of shit that they were doing. This director was insane. He was Willy Wonka-ing the entire movie.
Isn't just another side of genius?
Like I definitely think he was like trying to embody Willy Wonka in the making of the movie. I'm not kidding. I really do believe that.
You likened it to a Saw film, I think, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Well, it is kind of like the Saw trilogy, though, or Saw, whatever. I don't think it's a trilogy. I think it's a whole bunch of movies now, but it is kind of like the Saw movies, all 50 million of them. I don't know how many Saw movies there are, but I know there's more than one. And it is very similar to that. I get that. It's creepy, though, because now I want to talk about something slightly different, but related. So in mythology, and for those of us listening, for those of you listening, if you want to research this, I highly recommend, you know, looking at the works of Carl Gustav Jung, looking at the works of Joseph Campbell. But for those listening, there are good resources for subjects involving archetypes and the collective unconscious, and specifically a specific archetype, which is also a figure in mythology, and that's the trickster. And tricksters throughout mythology, depending upon, you know, whether you're the Hopi Indians and you're talking about, I forget the name of it, but it's this weird rabbit, or these other tricksters. Tricksters are very intelligent, kind of creepy. They have some secret knowledge. Like, they have a secret piece of information. And often, as part of a story, that's the information you need. Like, you as a hero or you as a protagonist, you need that information from the trickster. But the trickster keeps that guarded in riddles and lessons and a lot of just weird, wacky behavior. Another thing about tricksters, too, is that they're rule breakers. So, like, in any religious structure, you typically have adherence to principles and rules, right? But the tricksters are the characters who go way outside the rules. They find the boundaries. They go beyond what's acceptable. And when I think about Willy Wonka, he seems a lot like a trickster. He seems a lot like one of these figures in mythology that has secret information, that has data, but in a lot of ways is more or less, and I don't know how to phrase this, He's also keeps secrets. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I loved it when you likened him to the trickster, because I've always called him a supervillain, which I did make a good case for, I believe. But I really think that when I was like, well, okay, I think I know what a trickster is when you were talking about it like weeks ago. And I Googled it and just did a quick run through and I'm like, yep, trickster. That fits perfectly.
What do you think, Carmageddon, about that issue?
Oh, can't hear you.
Oh. Yeah, I think we lost him. I think we dropped him.
I was just getting lazy about the button pushing. Okay. So when I was younger, my first foray into mythology was with Greek mythology in the fourth grade. So I was like 10 years old. And one of my favorite characters to read about was Hermes. And because he would get into some kind of mischief, but it was typically like the benefit of the people he was working with. Whereas when Zeus got into some shit, he was always like killing people or getting them killed or like raping somebody, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I liked that. And then those types of characters were always appealing to me. I don't know why, but as an adult, and, you know, a semi-professional internet troll, I believe that the role of the trickster is to undermine tyrants and or enable the little person to balance the playing field a little better. And because they have sort of this ability to, they're known for their communication and for their specific or secret knowledge that they have, that allows them to sort of get outside of the box and subvert the system that they're trying to subvert. They couldn't unless they were able to break out, right? So I think that it appeals to the anarchist in me, for one thing. And I also think that, I think that's it. I think it appeals to the anarchist in me, the comedian in me, the person who likes stuff to actually be equal, because I think that we all are equal, so stop pretending you're better than other people. Mm-hmm. And that's, I've always liked that. So seeing Willy, I think that's why I prefer to think of Wonka as basically paving the way for Charlie to take over. I think it's a coming of age, like a rite of passage. It's narcissistic, to be sure, but like when we talk about demigods and great men with superpowers, they typically are, you know, especially when they're trying to get what they want, no matter who's involved. And he definitely does that.
Well, so for a trickster to be a trickster, in my opinion, there does have to be, from a cultural perspective, a redeeming aspect to what to his activity. Like, you may not like what a trickster does in any individual case, but the overall activity has to kind of serve a purpose for the community. And so my question...
Like teaching lessons.
Like teaching lessons. But that's the question, Raylene. Does Willy Wonka teach... Is there one or more critical lessons that Willy Wonka teaches that would redeem him in the context of being a trickster? Is there?
Does everybody agree that it was redeeming? Is this 100% consensus that a trickster's redeeming qualities are redeeming? I mean, does everybody agree? I need to know that.
Well, I'm just saying tricksters aren't all bad. And so in order for us to think of Willy Wonka as a trickster, we have to ask ourselves, what is he doing that's positive? Like, tricksters are actually mostly positive. Like, they're not mostly negative. They're mostly positive.
Yeah, I think using them as examples of why those kids' vices or rudeness is bad for society or for them, or that it's a warning, don't do this. So I think he could say that he was providing a service in that sense. And there could be some people going, oh, you know, like it becomes like the boogeyman. Oh, watch out. If you eat too much food all the time, then you're going to fall into a river and die, you know?
Yeah.
That could happen. But he also is saying that no matter who you are, even if you're poor, if you're a good person, then you could come into total riches and have all of your wildest dreams come true.
So maybe one of the lessons is that even if you are at the bottom of, even if you're at the bottom of the heap, or you're very poor and more or less on the edge of everything, you too could have a chance to be a king. Like, maybe one of the messages, anybody could be king. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be, because these are all people that had excess. And
right.
They were all spoiled. They all had excess, every one of them. I mean, even the TV kid had excess entertainment and excess television. But even when he was demanding a gun, his parents were like, you know, oh yeah, you can have it when you're 12. But he obviously has things. So the kid gets whatever he wants. Veruca obviously gets whatever she wants. And then the Violet, it sounds like she gets whatever she wants too.
It's Violet Beauregard is so spoiled that she has resorted to chewing gum the longest and in the most irritating way to get her acknowledgments. Like, I don't think, because her dad's a very successful
showboat
car salesman or something. He does
and
something.
Politician. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pushy and taking whatever she wants, that's who she is. And then you have poor Gustav, who it eats in excess, right?
Right.
All spoiled in different ways.
Well, maybe that is the key to the message right there. Maybe the message is, for people that have everything, or people that seemingly have everything, value nothing. And that maybe what Willy wanted to do is say, I need to teach a lesson in valuing things, and I need to understand how these kids value things. Because the other possibility is this: what if it really was a question of he didn't know who would win? Like, I know that maybe maybe we could say he knew who he wanted to win, and maybe that's the case. I didn't read the book, so it very well could be the case that this was predestined, okay? But what if really he invited this motley crew of kids because he wasn't really sure which kid would be the one that would be the best? Would it be the poor kid? Would it be the kid who, you know, maybe he really didn't understand. Like, maybe he really was trying to see who would be the best person to understand the lesson, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like, what if the golden ticket locations were put out there by these Oompa Loompas who are acting as oracles behind the scenes, you know, during these, like, weird occult rites that they do from their own home world, and then Willy Wonka's like back there communing with their weird Oompa Loompa spirits,
and then
they're like, yeah, there's gonna be one over here and one over there, but they don't know exactly who's gonna win, because it's because actually by interfering, Willy Wonka changes the outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it can happen.
So what about this idea that Willy Wonka? Because here's the thing. It can't just be about, I want to find the kid that's not selfish. Because that's a stupid, I'm not saying that's a stupid lesson. It's just, it doesn't seem like.
No, you packed it right the first time.
It's a children's book, too. I mean, how much is this satire, really? How much satire is
it? No, I think it was about the goodness in your heart. I think it was about that message that the person who needed those things the most and could have actually saved, like, sold that secret and pulled his family out of poverty, did the right thing.
Right.
True. He had integrity. Yes.
Yeah. Principles.
Well, okay. And actually,
did you notice?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Did you notice that the Wonka's office is not like it's two different rooms and alternating? It's actually half of the room is visible and the other half doesn't exist or can't be seen. So that, like, he never shows the whole face at the same time, or everything that he does is a cover for something, or he's missing these essential pieces. I think that says a lot about his persona in that room.
But
that was a really interesting thing. And I was wondering if that was in the book.
No. Okay. Nope. That was not in the book. That was a thing they did for the movie, because that movie was, they did such a big job on the entire set and they didn't do anything to the plain old office. And then the director was upset about it because he realized that he completely shortchanged his most personal room.
That's hilarious.
And so that, but the director did settle on everything being half, cut in half. Like, he was missing his other part, I thought, when I found that out. I mean, that's what he was looking for, his other half. The good part, the good one. He was looking for the good one.
Mm.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is the next angle. Have you guys ever seen the show Arrested Development?
I'm going to bring this up. I literally have it on my notes right here.
Okay, but if you haven't, that's cool. But there's this storyline in Arrested Development about the dad, the patriarch, who would teach his kids lessons. And he had this friend who lost his arm. And so he would do these lessons with his friend where his fake arm would get ripped off and there'd be a fountain of blood. He would do all these lessons like, don't do this, don't do that. And they would be
always leave a note.
Always leave a note.
Walter Weatherman.
Yeah, okay. Walter Weatherman. And I just gotta say, wow, what a great guy. But here's the question.
Well, it worked, didn't it? I mean, we're still leaving notes.
Oh,
to the
my God. I was in tears screaming the first time I watched it, laughing so hard. That show is so brilliant. It is brilliant.
It is. Oof. Yeah.
And I love there's so many times they did this episode where they keep showing this man showing up at different stages of their life. So they have these child actors pretending to be them when they were kids and they're on a family vacation, you know, just hanging out. But one time someone used up all the milk and didn't tell anybody. And so he had his former employee with that's a one-armed man come here and pretend to lose his hand when all this happened. And all the kids are screaming and blood's everywhere. And then everybody looks at their daughter and says, and that is why you always leave a note.
Right.
They do these different scenarios that just are so funny.
Well, so here's the thing, and that's kind of a question, because Willy Wonka teaches lessons in really shocking ways. And one of the questions I was going to ask you guys, because you're parents, I'm not a parent, you guys are parents. Is there anything valuable to a lesson for a kid being shocking and dangerous and scary? Like, is that a good way to teach kids lessons?
No.
I've done it, and it was wrong. I learned. I've done it. I had my first two starter kids. You know, they're really breaking you in as a parent. And yeah. So my dad did stuff like that to me. So I thought that was like how you do it for a little while. Okay. And this is really embarrassing because my dad's a terrible, terrible human. And a narcissist, and he was there for the glee of scaring me. I didn't know this. I just I was in a psyop and was brainwashed by my father because he would tell people about how he's such a good dad because he does what it takes to teach me the lesson. So I believe that bullshit, just like the statists do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done little not to, to fake blood and all that kind of stuff, but I've done things like that in the past. And then I realized that this is, once the kids were like, yeah, remember when you did that? That was so messed up. And I mean, they're kind of like laughing about it, but it was messed up. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. And so I just, that we don't do that anymore. Sorry, world.
Well, I mean,
they're fine.
You know,
they're fine. They are. They're
good. So, Carmageddon, what do you think about teaching shocking lessons?
I'm not for it. And I've been the recipient of a couple of shocking lessons. Nothing totally savage, I don't think. You know, some people get thrown into water and get told to swim, right? And there are people that think that that's okay to this day. They say, well, that's how I was raised and it worked just fine for me. And you know what? That is just a thing that happens with people. That's a cultural phenomenon, and it happens. And I've accepted that. I that's other people's business, but that's not for me. I would hate that. So I would not want to ever do that to people I love. That's just how that works. It's the golden rule. It's easy. So, I'm not for it. And then also, the lesson that you're trying to teach, probably, I mean, it's very difficult to teach complex lessons to kids using words that they understand. If you're basically like shocking them in just a couple of seconds or moments with an intense emotional response for these concepts that are not yet solidified in their brains, they couldn't articulate with many words, I don't really know if you're getting what you want across. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like if you're trying to reinforce simple lessons this way, that there must be a reason that you have to resort to such extreme measures. And then maybe you should stop and think about the lesson you're trying to teach in the first place.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Anytime you have to beat the shit out of a child to teach them something, you're fucking doing it wrong.
Well,
you
we
are,
didn't do
I
that.
Promise you. Right. Yeah, I'm not saying, but I know that there are people that do that, right? And so I don't believe that they have the child's interest at heart in those moments. I don't. And then other stuff where it's like with Ray's dad did something once where he pretended he didn't know the way home.
And when she was two.
She was a baby.
That's true, I remember it.
And it fucking traumatized her because she was intelligent enough to know that they were away from home, and he knew that, and he was testing her in a way. He wanted to see just how smart she was, and he was doing it in the most cruel and hurtful way possible. He wanted to do it, right? And that's really...
Yeah, he was, like, experiencing
glee. There's no way you could say...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no way you could say he was just trying to teach her a lesson, but even if you entertained that notion, I don't see, like... All I think a 2-year-old is going to get out of that is don't ever fucking leave the house. So I guess if that's what you're trying to teach them, then that would work. But then when they get older, they got to leave the house.
Yeah,
so
the thing is,
then you got to undo
cover
that
story
lesson
was
too,
that it
right?
was a lesson. So that's the thing. The cover story is a lesson. That's really good, actually. I'm really glad that you brought that up, babe, because there's the difference between a narcissist and a misguided person.
Sure.
A misguided person is trying to teach the lesson. And a narcissist is using that as a cover story to completely mentally torture someone and enjoying it in right. every moment. Which, so I was gaslit into believing the narrative, right, the cover story, which... has this plausible deniability, and people might believe because other people do teach these lessons or do these extreme things. And once I started doing my therapy and I'm telling my story in therapy, I went back into time. I went back into my own body and I remembered it as a 2-year-old. I could remember every bit of it in a whole nother way. And the big one was that I could feel him like laughing, like, cause I was on a bicycle behind him. And I couldn't see him very well, so I could only see his face when he was looking back. But he was enjoying the shit out of it, and I could feel it coming off of his body. I could feel that energetically. He was loving it. And I remember looking at the ground and wanting to jump off this bike, but I was strapped in.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I guess, so here's the difference. Is Willy Wonka a narcissist, or and is a trickster a narcissist for one? And because do they really want to teach the lesson, or are they there for the game?
That's the thing about trickster. That's why they're called tricksters. You never really know.
I'm thinking they might be narcissists.
Yeah, I mean,
what if they're just trying to force evolution's hand?
Here's the thing.
Like hubris.
Full disclosure. I'm not an expert on Jungian psychology or analytic psychology or mythology. So full disclosure, whatever opinions I have about tricksters are the opinions of a crazy dude in Little Saigon. But from what I understand about tricksters is that in general, mythologically, they tend to be net positive. They show up in almost every mythology. In fact, I haven't really found one yet. Okay, I think I will, but I haven't found one yet in the Bible that I would identify 100% as a trickster figure. But I'm guessing that by the time I do all my biblical studies, I'll find characters I'd say, yep, that's kind of a trickster. But the fact is, tricksters are net positive. They do teach lessons. They do help you to learn and to grow. But the problem is the learning and the growth scenarios can sometimes be really, really dangerous. And the other thing is
like
this.
Like the movie The Game with Sean Penn.
Yeah, like that. But here's the other thing too. Tricksters are not really... tricksters, when in the context of children, I think are kinder. And the stories related to kids tend to be kind. But tricksters in general are figures that kids, when they become adults, come into contact with. And tricksters are sometimes related to that rite of passage, which means how does a kid become an adult? Well, sometimes a trickster is waiting for you at the doorway, and the trickster is the one that's going to take you on that adventure, which will be a little bit risky. But again, when you think about this like in the context of like Native American culture, the idea is that these were kids who were getting ready to become adults. So the issue of danger, well, from their perspective, and I think from probably all of our perspectives, at some point, there are these stages where you know, and I don't really know because I'm not a parent, but at some point, there's a stage at which you say, I have to let my kid take a risk. I have to let my child make a mistake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So hard, though.
My daughter moved to Ellensburg, right? And we're on the side of the mountains, and they're on that side. And when she left recently, she was saying, we might have to move because of career stuff or extra schooling, is what she tells us. She's 22 now.
Yeah.
And she was telling us that she might be moving. And I was like, okay, cool. I was super supportive. I just love her. I want her to be happy, and I support whatever she does. She's an adult, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to make her feel anything about what we care about. Like, we just want her to know we care about her. And so I'm being really cool about it. And then she's like, yeah, I knew you'd be fine. Yeah, I get it. And then later she comes back the same day. Like, she looks over and she's like, I really thought you were going to be mad at me when I told you that I was thinking about moving to Georgia. And I said, what? She goes, because you were really mad at me when I wanted to move to Ellensburg. You were really mad at me. And It was the weirdest experience. This just happened like last week, and she was telling me this, and I go, or a couple weekends ago, and I said, no, I wasn't mad at you. I was afraid for you. I was afraid for you that you're going to be across the mountains, and what if something happened, and it's going to take me hours to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all. And, but, you know, because she was just 18 at the time, and it's funny how kids think that when you're afraid for them or you have concerns that you're mad at them. That was really interesting for me to see what kind of impact I've had on my daughter with the mistakes that I've made before. And but ultimately, a good parent will understand that they've prepared their child for the world in every way they can, and now you just have to support them and trust what you've taught them, and they're going to go out there and do okay, you know. And the closer you are with them, the more they're going to ask you for advice.
Well, but that means you got to teach them stuff.
Yeah, so this whole premise of anything that they should go out there and sow their oats, and they should go out there and live their life, because when they're young, they have a sense of fearlessness. And when people get older, and we're talking like after your 30s, people get a lot less adventurous. Unless they're having a midlife crisis and they don't like the way their life went because they tried too hard to be on track, whatever that
means. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, I went through that in 2016.
So many men go through that. Women too.
And it's because to go through that.
They are. Yeah, that's it's right, and it's because they were never meant to be on a track. They were meant to be making their own way. Men are meant to be wild, at least in part of their hearts. They are meant to have that in any way an amalgamation that looks like.
So I have a thought for the two of you.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, I don't want to sound sacrilegious at all, but in my opinion, Jesus meets the definition of the trickster quite handily. Hold on.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Because ultimately what we've been talking about is that he wants to teach the lessons, and he does go outside of the current structure of things, right? And he does things like flip tables, or the one thing Jesus never does, though, is he doesn't deceive people.
Exactly.
And also, I think it's relevant to say that because Jesus is sort of, well, because Jesus is God and God is everything, I think Jesus would have elements of all the archetypes represented in him, right? Like in writings about him, or in the things that he says, or the things that he does. But I just wanted to, I kind of talked myself out of that one. Actually,
there's a certain angle, though. I'm going to be on your side on this one. There is a certain aspect to Jesus in his life, as I understand it, because he was human. He was God and he was human. He was a human being like us and he was God. And there's an aspect to it where I do think he had a sense of humor. That's the thing about tricksters. They tend to have a sense of humor. There are, you know, I do think there are features of the trickster in the story, but I don't think he's a trickster because Jesus is net good. Like he doesn't want to keep secrets. Okay. Tricksters love to keep secrets. Okay. Jesus doesn't
keep
secrets.
That's really the one big divergence for me, is that he never lies.
Yeah.
He straight up tells the truth.
But that's
every time,
critical,
no matter
though.
What.
But that's critical because the main thing for tricksters is fucking with people.
That's true, yeah.
You know?
Like Dr. Rourke.
Like, yeah. Rourke. Like fucking Mr. Rourke, that motherfucker. Sorry. I don't know. But okay, before we go
to the crossover hit.
Yeah. Before we go too far, I want to talk about Charlie Bucket's mom. Because in the movie, and I don't know if this is true in the story, she shows up at the beginning, but then it's like, instead of going with her to the chocolate factory, he goes with Grandpa Joe. And I wonder about this. Like, what is that? What is that? Was it the right thing to do? Or was that essentially her just saying, I don't know, I don't care, go ahead and go with Grandpa Joe? It's always seemed weird to me because you look at her life, it looked like she was really beat down. And
she couldn't take the time off.
Right.
Yeah, she has three other old people to take care of.
Well, I mean, but couldn't, you know what though? It just seems like Grandpa Joe could have done that. Doesn't
he? He could have, but
in hindsight, she's
codependent. She's codependent. Yeah. So she's a codependent that feels like if she doesn't do things, then everyone's going to die and everything's going to fall apart, and she's a drudge. All right. And Grandpa Joe is a narcissistic, but I don't mean like a NPD narc like I talk about, but more like a very self-interested, selfish person.
Yeah.
It's all about Grandpa Joe. Everything's about Grandpa Joe. Even when he says this boy doesn't have anything to look forward to, it's all about Grandpa Joe. Okay. So that's my stance on it. He was going to be like, well, I have to go. And she's like, oh, okay. He's like, well, otherwise, and she's thinking, I have to let him go. Otherwise, he'll go back. He'll be so disappointed. He'll be decrepit again. And then it'll be my fault. That's what happened.
Yeah.
What if Grandpa Joe and the other two and the mom are all fabrications of Willy Wonka's, because Charlie is the newest candy that Willy Wonka has created. He is an artificially intelligent candy, and Willy Wonka wants to give him the best experience he can in poverty so that when he takes over, he won't run amok and kill everyone on the planet for being subpar.
Wow. So you're basically saying that Charlie Bucket is like, it's almost like the boys from Brazil where they clone Hitler Charlie Bucket is like a special chocolate human project for Willy Wonka, and he was training him to be ready, and Charlie doesn't know this, and now he'll find out that it's always been the case. But that would also kind of imply, I think, a Boys from Brazil scenario, because wouldn't Willy do what I think it was Dr. Mengele or whatever in that movie, but wouldn't he go ahead and just spread his seed everywhere and then see which one turns out to be the Hitler?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. What are your thoughts, dude?
I don't know either.
Have you guys ever seen that movie? Have you ever seen that movie?
Factory.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlie's some sort of candy homunculus.
Yeah.
It has, like, a soul or something, or it's, you know.
Nobody's going to make candy with cabbage juice.
Whoa. You're saying Charlie's like a golem.
Yeah.
Oh.
No one's going to make. Yeah,
a chocolate golem. Like there's Hebrew symbols on the back of his head, and if you wash them away, he turns back into chocolate.
Yeah, it's the only way to explain his messy ass hair. I mean, who lets their kid walk around with his hair like all uncombed like that? I mean, comb that kid's hair. Jeez.
By the same token,
I think it's all a fabrication.
Yeah. Wouldn't his whole family be golems too? Really?
Like, yeah,
well,
that's
his mother is obviously a golem.
Are they paid
so
actors?
Grandparents.
It could be paid actors. That dude has loyalty in his tribe. The dude who plays Slugworth, he basically has to be available 24/7 on standby for when those golden tickets get found, because he has to get there and be the first one to make an offer and assassinate any other chocolatier espionage agents who try to make offers with the kids. Have you ever thought about that? Because Slugworth is controlled opposition. He works for Wonka, which means there would be other entrepreneurial espionage agents out there trying to do the same shit. But Slugworth has them taken out before they ever get to the kids to ensure that they have the best deal. That way it stays all in-house. No messy loose ends.
Do you guys know that this is based on his actual life in that school as a child, in that boarding school?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they, about the candy factory thing, there was Cadbury, I believe, and then another brand of chocolate. And they would come over and bring and sample their treats and take, like, their reviews as test subjects for their candy.
Like, right?
Yeah, and it was these two companies that would do this and give them free candy and for their reviews, and they would both actually, like, sneak into the other factories to get their secrets and to find out what they were making. This is actually true.
Wow.
And then they got really, 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 like, beefed up all their security and because of the spies. And this is a real story from his childhood.
Huh.
Cronyism,
so that's what
y'all
inspired it.
Impossible without IP. Just saying.
No, it is not. That's a lie. Because if they're... That's not true, because that would happen in the private industry. Okay, whatever.
I don't even want to get into the intellectual property thing, because for a lot of people, especially in the libertarian, anarchist, voluntarist, ANCAP, agorist world, the issue of intellectual property is a really, really it's almost like our third rail. Because me personally, I think we're supposed to share ideas, not the product of our work, which means it's smart for us to communicate and share ideas. That's not communism. That's not communism. Communism is where we're expected to share our work, like share the labor.
Nothing, none of it matters as long as you're not forcing it, right? If a person wants to keep his shit a secret, fine.
Exactly.
You just can't force them to share it.
Exactly.
She's right. Willy Wonka's stuff is private, and if he wants to protect his stuff with a gate and keep other people from seeing his factory except under special circumstances, then that's great. And if somebody were to somehow get his recipe and put it out there, if he tried to use state force to get it back, then he would be wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Unless they were trespassing.
But theft is wrong, right? And they'd have to get onto his property. Yeah, all that. I agree. I'm with you both on that one.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean...
Because it's as a holistic thing, IP has to be taken as, like... Like, what are ideas? You know, you have to know why you think things. And frankly, ideas are not unique to individuals. They can't.
Yeah, I would blow up.
And yet they are.
I would fight club. Like, I'm not really going to do this, everybody, for real, on a peaceful purpose. But if I had a Fight Club moment, this is my thing, I would totally, like, go in to, and I would mass produce and give everybody all the old IP plans, like all the IP stuff, all of the patents, everything that's ever been submitted that did not get passed. I would be like, here, free the information.
Yeah.
If I were totally just, like, it's like taking out the credit card companies, this is what I would do. I would share the information.
Well,
I would love, like, a private thing where people upvoted and downvoted kind of things with their own inventions, and they were doing a free share with all of their own inventions, and then they would credit people you would support and buy from products from the people that were inventors that invented this. So it's like crediting artists.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really cool. And if you would document when you came up with these things with to prove that this is when you came up with these ideas, and if anybody else came about with them sooner and they have more evidence, it'd be kind of like Wikipedia style. I think it'd be really fucking neat.
But yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into IP, but I will tell you, my basic belief is this. Sharing, we don't have to share. This is where I agree with Carmageddon. We're not obligated to share ideas. But I do think it's a way that we progress. But also, I can't imagine ever wanting any force to be used to protect someone's mind in terms of protect people's ideas from being taken, just because where does that go? You know? Like, ultimately, yeah, we have to trust each other on some level. And my view is this. If you come up with a good idea in an honest, decent society, people will take that idea, they may make money with it, and then hopefully they'll donate something back to you. And maybe that's naive, but that's kind of how I think it should work.
Sometimes people forget what money actually is.
And advertising and branding would still be a thing. And people are brand loyal. And people do want to buy the originals. And if you are the first one out there making money off of it, then you're supposed to take that money and put it into your next product or expansion. I mean,
right,
that's just how things work.
Right.
It already works that way. So, you know, that's how I look at it.
So locking...
So I'm
oh, yeah, go ahead. Gal. Sorry. So kind of like locking up the ideas someplace so that people can't touch them, especially if they're ideas that nobody's doing anything with, to me that seems wrong, you know?
Yeah.
It seems
the only
really...
reason to do that is to artificially create scarcity. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
And because when you create scarcity, you can charge more. It's supply and demand. You control it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. The only reason.
Yeah, and that's why what happened with Tesla's works and is disgusting. It's disgusting. And these are evil people. And although free markets, it is the best, most peaceful, most moral markets. The truth is that capitalism is disgusting because humans are disgusting. Like, there are still going to be filthy, evil acts with capitalism. You can't stop evil, and it's because humans are evil and they want to subjugate.
Yeah.
And that will always exist no matter what.
Agreed.
And that's why. So everything that people hate about capitalism, usually we say, well, that's cronyism, or that's, and yes, it is. And so that, but what inspires those people to be like that? Satan.
Yeah.
Straight up. That's evil. It just is. So that it still exists. I mean, do you remember that movie that Daniel Day-Lewis was in, There Will Be Blood? Is that
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes. That was a good film.
I mean,
go ahead.
Gosh. Yeah, go on.
Well, no, it was a good film because it dealt with a couple topics of interest. I'm interested in the subject of oil and petroleum as a subject, but it also dealt with this idea of the sort of brutal, unfeeling, you know, kind of like amoral sort of capitalist figure of the late 19th, early 20th century, and it is an interesting thing. I don't know what to say about him beyond. There are people that hate the character, and then there are other people who would say, well, that's just the way that people were. You know, they were tough. They were mean. They were, you know, they were who they were.
Like that. Well, those characters still exist, and they are evil capitalists, but he's the kind of person that would take everybody's drinking water and stuff that they would eat with so they could, you know, water their crops.
Yeah.
And he legitimately stole from under their property all of their water, and that's an evil act, and it was to subjugate. So ultimately it comes down to, sure, but there be a law, should there be a law? Let's put it this way. That man should be killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the people who know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And no one else.
Okay, so...
And
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You had a thought.
Well, like, so anybody...
That sounds very
in my opinion, anybody who wanted to go after Willy Wonka for disfiguring their kids would be, you know, they'd have to take a hard look at themselves because they went into that situation knowing that they were going to rip him off, right? And whether or not you can... I don't think it's justifiable to ruin the kid's life over them wanting to steal candy, but also... they didn't really take it to that depth in the film.
Right.
So maybe we shouldn't either. But he does disfigure these children, so in some way or another, their lives are somewhat ruined, health-wise.
Well, they accepted the risk by going at the same time. I mean, especially like Veruca, what she was doing, the kid, the TV kid. The river one, I agree with you, Dan. I think that one was a bit of a stretch. I wish it would have made it more like you really broke the rule.
Well, that kid couldn't fucking hold it for a second. It was literally the first item he could get into. That's how gluttonous and impulsive he was.
Yeah, you're right.
He couldn't handle himself. He was weak cannon fodder.
Wait, well, you guys, I don't think Justin would have made it through this factory.
No way.
Okay? As a child or an adult.
I would have been cut just like Augustus Gloop. No. I would have been a third waiver because I would have thought I could get away with it whenever I tried to do it.
He would have drank the soda.
I would have died in this ceiling fan, yep.
And for me, I would have made it through. I would have been Charlie. I was that kid.
That's true.
I mean, isn't that true, Jay? I'm like...
that's why I love you, babe.
I would have... Now, Dan, would you have made it through?
I would have... Okay, so I would have immediately figured out a way to hide because there was so much activity going on and then get off the tour. Like, how can I get off this...
Thank you. You think you would hide. You would hide. When did Wonka find out that Charlie drank the soda? Because he knew, right? And he knew without a doubt. And I didn't see any cameras anywhere. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but so they're Oompa Loompas.
He had a spy network.
Yeah.
He was in the loop, like, constantly. There's no way you would have gotten away.
Well, I think there are Oompa Loompas everywhere. And I think they have, like, little eye slits. Like, you know, like in the old movies where there'll be a painting where the eyes will be taken off. And then the Oompa Loompas behind the eyes. I think there were lots of eye slits in that place where Oompa Loompas were just watching everything going on, I think. It's pretty crazy.
And they got really weird shit, too. Like, that boat thing is... I don't know if... I would like to think of it as an elevator. I mean, I know... Because they don't travel very far physically, or it doesn't look like it. So I just imagine that the reason for the whole light show is that they're actually moving floors or something really complex like that. Because it's distracting, you know?
It is.
Remember when Veruca's like, what is this, some kind of freak out? I thought that was amazing. Like, how does she know what a freak out is? How old's that kid?
Yeah.
She's like 12 or 11.
How does she know what a freak out is? What is she talking about? That's crazy.
I think it's from those propaganda films against marijuana.
Oh, maybe so.
Yeah, it could be.
Reaper.
Okay, before we close out, I'd like to give you guys all a chance to sort of recap your perspectives on the subject, whatever you want to talk about. Raylene, you go first.
About Willy Wonka?
Yeah, anything related to this. Like, just what would you want to leave the listener with, or is there anything you'd want to talk about before we go?
Okay, no, I think that we covered most of it. There's a lot of funny, weird notes about the movie that we took, but honestly, they're not necessary. I think we did a good job.
Okay, well, actually, we can always go back to those notes, too, at some point. What do you think?
That's so funny.
What do you think, Carmageddon, about... How would you close this one out?
Well, this was a predictably delightful experience. I haven't seen this film in years, I don't think. I did get to watch it with my kids and my wife, which are all of my favorite people. And then talking about it was a lot of fun. And I had some really cool ideas along the way. So I had a tremendously good time. And if that... is all it is, it was well worth it to me.
Cool. Well, I really appreciated you guys joining me for this. I will say I felt a little off my game today, so if you could sense that, I am sorry. A little bit disconnected, you know. But other than that, it is what it is. I know. I am some kind of trickster. I don't know. But that being said,
I like you.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that being said, folks, I really appreciate your guys' time. I know that you guys are busy and your parents, and that's a lot. That's a big deal. And as far as, like, the listeners go, thank you so much for listening. It's actually you taking some of your time to listen. I highly recommend Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the original. I've never seen the remake. And I think that I think we would all agree that Roald Dahl, his works are worth looking at, even if you're an adult. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, fair, and if fair. You have kids, do it. Because
this is a book to read out loud to your kids.
And they'll read on their own, too. It'll get them to want to read. Promise.
Cool.
If they're going to read, they'll want to read because of these books.
These books treat children like human beings. They do not talk down to kids. And they are very real because they are deliciously dark and whimsical and adventurous. And I think that they have something for everyone. And I really love the tone in which he sets these stories because they're detailed and clever and fun and doesn't shy away from bizarre darkness and gruesomeness. I love it.
Cool. Well, like I said, I appreciate you guys' time and I hope you have a great rest of your evening. And to all the listeners out there, thank you so much. And we will talk again some other time.